So they're the decision making body that have people in positions of power to say approve, say yes, or to say no to projects. And by us being here is showing them, one, our people know that you're making decisions that are not in our interest, and two, you have a responsibility to the crisis that most of us across different neighborhoods are experiencing.
To see more of Poor News Network Television, or PNN TV, that's PNN, not CNN, people, check out our YouTube channel, Poor News Network.
Finally, last week, houseless children and families held a vigil in one of the richest cities in the world, demanding housing and presenting their five-year plan to end homelessness. The Colonized Academy youth reporters reported and supported.
It wasn't nothing down in the mayor's office. He's not taking care of the city the way he's supposed to. He decided to wage war on us because we don't have no place to go and because we don't have no money. So he raised war on us. You don't have no money. So working for 40 years in this same city, paying my taxes and doing everything, and when I needed them, I was turned away. I did not get the proper care that I should have been getting. And so it's other people coming in. He's letting his people in his town, and he's giving them houses and making sure they're set up and taken care of. And which we should have first priority. In here. You was born here, right?
Yeah.
So you know what? You should become first priority, not somebody that's just walked in here yesterday.
It's funny how money changes situations. Miscommunication leads to complications.
So that's all for this segment of Poor News Network on Hard Knock Radio. Gratitude to Anita Johnson, David D, and Anthony Fest for media access. Thanks to all you listeners for your love and consciousness. All power to the people.
The time is 6:01. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Up next from the archives, and first some info for you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a dance party benefit for Safer Streets on Saturday, November 7th at 9 p.m. at Crush in Portland. Safer Streets offers free self-defense classes in various easily accessible locations for women in the Portland metro area who are experiencing homelessness, poverty, mental health or addiction issues, for sex workers, and for survivors of violence or abuse. Safer Streets is queer and trans friendly and welcomes and meets attendees at their particular needs or abilities. That's a dance party with DJ Aurora to benefit Safer Streets, Saturday, November 7th, 9 p.m. at Crush, 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month is the amazing Nina Simone, showing Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Nina Simone was one of America's true musical geniuses. With her unique signature mix of layering folk, gospel, classical, pop, and African music, along with a revolutionary vision of Black freedom, pride, and defiance. Again, that's the amazing and revolutionary Miss Nina Simone, showing as part of the We Real Cool film series on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes the history out of the oldest and largest collections of public radio programming in the United States and puts it back on the radio. On this edition of From the Vault, we look back on the murder of Arab-American political activist Alex O'Day in Santa Ana, California, on October 11th, 1985.
Well, the thing is, by calling the Palestinian leadership
bunch of murderers. That's not a very kind words for people who are determined and fighting for the liberation of their homeland, for regaining their rights to self-determination in their homeland.
Guest producer Gabrielle San Roman will host this week's episode.
This week on From the Vault, the assassination of Alex Odeh, an Arab-American martyr. Born in Jifna, Palestine in 1944, Alex Odeh became a poet, a lecturer, and Arab-American peace activist. He originally studied to become an engineer at Cairo University in Egypt. When the Six-Day War ended in 1967, Israeli authorities prevented Odeh from returning to his hometown in the West Bank. Living in exile changed him, starting off a life in politics. Alex Odeh immigrated to the United States in 1972, eventually continuing his studies with a master's degree in political science from Cal State Fullerton. In 1982, the Palestinian activist joined the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, a newly formed group aimed at combating grotesque Arab stereotypes in the media and bias in Middle East reporting. A year later, Odeh became the West Coast Regional Coordinator, setting up an office in Santa Ana, California. Death threats haunted Odeh on nearly a daily basis. On October 10, 1985, a local television station interviewed him about the Achille Lauro hijacking and murder of Jewish American Leon Klinghoffer. Odeh spoke, condemning terrorism across the board, but argued the media was too quick to link the attack to the PLO. As fate would have it, the activist opened the door to his office the next morning for what was to be another routine day at work. When the door swung open, a powerful pipe bomb exploded, killing Odeh. For 30 years, the murder case of Alex Odeh remains unsolved by the FBI. Originally aired on KPFK Radio in Los Angeles, Political Terrorism in the United States, The Assassination of Alex Odeh, is an early look at the circumstances surrounding the terrorist attack. Produced by Diane James and Michael Bogoplosky, the February 13, 1986 radio documentary features the voices of Alex Odeh, his family, the FBI, and members of the Jewish Defense League, an organization originally named by investigators as the probable culprit of the crime. Just who killed Alex Odeh remains a question unanswered to this day.
Good afternoon. This is Diane James with Middle East in Focus, a bi-weekly look at Israel, the Arab states, and the Middle Eastern political arena. Today we look at the death of a local Arab American leader, Alex Odeh.
What happened to Alex is a very significant event in the life of America, and not just in the life of the Arab American community. What happened before, as far as ethnic groups, were so-called isolated incidents here and there. But this was a premeditated, planned event.
Alex Odeh was born in the West Bank Palestinian village of Jifna in 1944. He attended college at Bir Zeit and later Cairo University, from which he graduated in 1967 in the midst of the Six-Day War. When the Israeli military government refused to allow him back to the West Bank, he emigrated to the United States and came to Orange County, where he continued his education. Several years later, he became the Western Regional Director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, known as the ADC. In this capacity, he served as a spokesman for the local Arab-American community and was known for his work in building links with local Jewish organizations. In October last year, Alex Odeh was killed by a bomb blast in the Santa Ana office of the ADC at the height of a series of international attacks and counterattacks at Larnaca, Tunis, and aboard the Italian cruise ship the Achille Lauro, where the American tourist Leon Klinghoffer was murdered. At the time of his death, Odeh was married and had three small children. At a memorial service following the bombing, his brother Sammy recalled the years they shared an apartment near Cal State Fullerton.
It was within the walls of that tiny apartment that I got to know Alex and his obsessions.
I discovered that my brother was obsessed with the love of his family, the love of his homeland, the love of his people, and the love of his heritage. He was obsessed with moderation and the need for communication. And he was obsessed with optimism.
Most media reports of the bombing made reference to Ode's appearance on KABC the night before, in which he said, quote, "I think the media mistakenly linked this incident to the PLO. As far as I know, Arafat did an excellent job, and we commend Arafat for his positive role in solving this issue. The media ought to give the PLO and Arafat recognition."
A pitcher who can paint the corners is known as a Rembrandt.
PLO as a political organization, and Arafat in particular as the chairman of the PLO, who is a man of peace, unquote. He also said that the incident showed that, quote, "violence breeds violence," unquote. Following the murder, the ADC vowed not to rest until those responsible for the act were caught. ADC head James Aburisk explained at a news conference what the ADC strategy would be.
I want to also announce tonight ADC, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, will form a national group of respected law enforcement officials of different various political persuasions, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, to continue to push for the investigation of the people responsible for Alex's killing. And that is, I intend to begin calling together people of national prominence in that have been in law enforcement or are presently in law enforcement, and ask them to form this committee, and we will stay in existence, and we will continue to push until we've brought the killers of Alex to justice. And we don't mean to forget this, believe me.
In fact, 3 months later, it is clear that more than any single event in recent memory, the death of Alex Aude has highlighted the problems the Arab American community has with the media and with law enforcement officials.
At the beginning, the first 2 weeks, they were all united and no differences of any political views or anything. But now the time passes by, they are becoming less interested and they are going away from the problem. They forgot already that there is a threat toward each individual or any Arab in America or in Los Angeles.
Wahid Boktor, a journalist and producer of Arab American TV.
The way I see it, they should have been more persistent, pushing for getting some results. But only few people are working on that, which, you know, usually it's the leaders of the community and the people who are like James Aburisk and all this people, but the normal individual businessman that is not into politics, they are already forgetting about it.
The Arab world is a very diverse place, so you're not going to find the cohesiveness, I don't think, in the Arab American community that you might find in the Jewish community. There's a big lumping of Arabs, 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 but there's a great diversity in the Arab world as there is in the Arab American community.
Richard Saad, a local businessman.
From an Arab American perspective, the media could play an important part in making some effort to present issues, present the position or the perspective of the Arab American community. Alex made extensive statements in that interview before he died condemning the hijacking of the Achille Lauro. Out of the 40-minute interview, they edited it down to something like 35 or 40 seconds that made it appear as though that by listening to the statement made on television, it would appear as though he was commending Yasser Arafat and he was this, quote, pro-PLO guy, you know. They presented something that was really out of context with the man and what he stood for.
However, Richard Saad does not agree with the widely held theory that Audi's statements on ABC News incited his assassins.
There were constant references in the media about it having something to do with Alex's statements that he had made on KABC the night before. To me, that was kind of ridiculous. Whoever was interested in doing that had planned it out very well and had nothing to do with the fact. It just made it all look a lot better.
If the local Arab American community is in the midst of a crisis of unity and effectiveness, one of the major reasons for that is the loss of a man who was, by all accounts, one of the community's most energetic and effective spokesmen. In this respect, the assassins of Alex Odeh may have succeeded beyond their expectations by killing a man who was at the heart of community activism. David Habib, president of the local chapter of the ADC.
Well, Alex was one of those people that was capable of doing the work of 10 people and never really drawing any attention to that. And so we are finding it more difficult than we anticipated to keep the same workload up, if you will, that he was able to do through his own efforts and his own associates. And his charm, if you will, in getting people to do more than what they're committed to do.
Earlier this week, NBC TV aired a fictional program in which the U.S. became the target of vaguely defined Arab-Iranian terrorist groups. Local Arab Americans, however, see the question in a completely different light. Cheryl Ferris, a local attorney, speaking of Alex Odeh's assassination.
Sometimes I hear things on the radio and they say, well, we're worried that terrorism might come to the United States. And I keep thinking, well, it has. I mean, haven't people realized what went on here in October, that was an act of terrorism?
David Habib echoes this view.
Well, I think in the Arab American community, we're extremely concerned that this kind of a thing could take place here and be basically acknowledged as a politically motivated terrorist incident and have so little attention, at least public attention, paid to it.
Well, you know, the FBI has been harassing American Arab students and American Arab individuals for quite a time, and we have...
Again, Sami Audeh.
...for a fact that the ADC had filed a complaint with the FBI, especially during the Iranian crisis. There was a lot of harassment and a lot of unnecessary investigation that is without evidence. And, you know, the ironic thing is here, that by their own statistics, 57% of terrorist acts in the United States have been committed by or attributed to Jewish organization. 0% was attributed to any Arab kind of organization or individual. Yet, you know, here the Vic and about 30% of all terrorist acts in the United States have been against Arabs. So here the irony to me is the victim is being harassed and investigated.
In late January, we spoke with Sami Audeh and asked him if there were any new developments in the investigation of his brother's murder.
I've been talking at least once a week with the investigators, both at the Santa Ana Police and the FBI, about where do we stand now today, and I'm getting the same answer over and over. We're still analyzing and gathering data. About a month ago, they told me that, you know, they're down to investigating names and they're getting closer. But as you and I know, so far there's no arrest, and it doesn't look like there's an arrest imminent any time in the very near future. This week I have not spoken to them yet. Usually I try to call middle or the end of the week. As far as my own personal satisfaction or the family's feeling on the subject, naturally we are somewhat disappointed because, you know, we feel that between the FBI and the Santa Ana Police and the Orange Sheriff, they have enough resources to be a heck of a lot closer to an arrest if not already have been done. So I feel, I know I understand the complexities of the investigation, but I feel it's not going as quickly as we like it to be, and naturally unless we have an arrest being made, we are not going, I mean, we're not satisfied, you know, we don't want that to go down the drain and being forgotten. You know, I'm trying to be fair. I don't mean to say that I'm giving the runaround, but again, you know, I'm not giving too much information to at least make me feel that, you know, we're making some progress. You know, I'm getting the same standard answer that we're still collecting the device and analyzing the device and sending the device to the lab and talking to people, and that has been from week one.
In general, we found a range of opinion within the Arab American community about the FBI's conduct of its investigation and the ADC's performance of its watchdog role. We spoke with Barbara Shaheen in the Washington, D.C. office of the ADC.
Jim is still working on formalizing the commission itself, but as you know, he did meet with Webster in early December to make a determination about whether the FBI was actively involved in the investigation and whether it was devoting the necessary resources and giving these issues high enough priority. I can't be very specific because only Jim himself and William Webster know the details of what they discussed, but apparently whatever Webster did tell Jim about the resources that they were committing to the investigation left him reasonably satisfied that it was a high priority. We have no way of knowing the details of the investigation. Even in Jim's meeting with William Webster, it wasn't so much detail that they went into. We've got our backs in a corner in some ways because we have to rely on them to solve the investigation and to apprehend the criminals. At the same time, we understand that in an ongoing investigation, to give too much information publicly could only serve to jeopardize it.
We also spoke with Attorney James Cato, who is with the local liaison committee to the investigating authorities.
I'm sure that they have their own methods and their own procedures. I'm satisfied that they're doing everything that they can.
Again, Attorney Cheryl Ferris.
As far as I know, it's still under investigation. There was that initial leak from the FBI that implicated the JDL, which, as far as I know, has not been followed up on. And then there were later remarks that it might be the JDO. As far as I know, that William Webster himself has personally been involved with this and has written a letter to Senator Aberesk telling him that this is getting top priority. But we don't have anything definite yet.
Are you confident that it is getting top priority?
I hope it is. I'm not 100% confident that it is.
Hint Bakke worked with O'Day in the Santa Ana office. She was the person who normally opened the office in the morning. But on the morning of October 11th, she had an early errand and Alex O'Day arrived at the office first.
What do you think of the FBI investigation?
I don't know what to think of it because, really, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of, I'm really in the dark.
Were you questioned at any point by the FBI?
Of course. A lot of people were questioned. I mean, many people in our community were questioned.
Apparently, the FBI questioned the Arab American community intensively and thoroughly. Some members of the community felt they had been harassed, so much so that they sought a meeting with a representative of the Los Angeles County Commission on Human Relations. One woman described what happened to her when she sought to have a lawyer present during her interview with the FBI.
When I found that I couldn't have an attorney on hand to speak with me to them and tried to cancel the appointment or postpone it, I must say that really they became hysterical. And they threatened me on every level. They threatened my job and my family. They threatened my home and my personal security as well.
Bunny Hatcher-Nightwalker with the Commission on Human Relations and Paul Hoffman, a lawyer with the ACLU, were at that meeting. Paul Hoffman.
And we do have a police practices attorney, though, who works full-time on police practices. We financed that out of the award that we got against the police department in the police spying case, in which many of these questions surfaced. When I negotiated that settlement with the police department, every time they talked about a terrorist, it was an Arab or an Armenian.
Yeah, those were Armenians.
Armenians and Arabs were the hypothetical use for the worst case every time we had a question.
We spoke with L.A. City Councilman Robert Farrell and raised the community's concern that an anti-Arab bias might be operating in the conduct of the investigation.
I'd like to suggest that perhaps their observations are very, very well
found it. And I think that comes perhaps from some, because there's a perception that it's really not that important to really pursue. Yes, it's a murder case and it's a tragedy, but it doesn't seem to have that sense of priority.
Early broadcast reports on October 11th said a man in a gray suit had hand-delivered a package to the Santa Ana office of the ADC about 9 a.m. This may not be inconsistent with the fact that mail was put through a metal detector, since Alex Aude had been receiving continuous threats and harassment over the phone, at the office, and at home for a period of several years from people who identified themselves as being with the Jewish Defense League. One witness who worked in the area said she had seen two men in the alley behind the building at about 7:15 a.m., and that one of them threw something into the trash bin while the other walked toward the door of the building. Later reports confirmed that the bomb was set to go off when the door to the office was opened. It was also learned that the device was similar to one that had been placed in front of the New England Regional Office of the ADC in Boston 2 months earlier on August 16th. That device, a 12-inch pipe bomb, had severely injured two Boston policemen who were attempting to defuse it. Both devices were apparently pipe bombs containing short fuses and a 9-volt battery set to go off when disturbed. City Councilman Bob Farrell.
And I learned that the amount of explosives used and the type of explosive was so strong that had the location of the explosives been someplace else, the whole building could have been collapsed, which means that everybody else in that building could have been also victimized and terrorized.
Shortly after the October bombing, FBI Chief William Webster reportedly said that the Santa Ana bombing, quote, corresponded to some bombings on the East Coast directed against people believed to be hostile to Israel, end quote. Webster admitted that he was referring to the Jewish Defense League, although he would not make the connection explicit. In early November, the FBI dropped a bombshell that later fizzled. Lane Bonner, supervisory special agent in the FBI's Washington press office, told the press that the FBI's Terrorism Research Center was attributing the Santa Ana bombing to the Jewish Defense League. But there were no arrests. Irv Rubin, national director of the Jewish Defense League, denied any involvement in the bombings. He said the allegations posed a danger to Jewish people everywhere in the United States, and that if the FBI had any evidence, they should, quote,
stop
manipulating the media, end quote, and proceed directly to an arrest. Rubin said if the FBI didn't arrest a JDL member within the next 24 hours, he would file a lawsuit against the agency for defamation, libel, and slander. Earl Krugel of the Los Angeles chapter of the Jewish Defense League offered us an interpretation of the FBI's strategy in pointing the finger at the JDL.
Yeah, it was kind of that wasn't a real smart move they did. Mm-hmm. They made a charge, an allegation. However, they didn't act on it, and then they later backed off it. I don't know what they were looking, you know, they were looking to come up with some answers real quick, and JDL was pretty convenient, so they named JDL. However, like Irv has said in the past, we had nothing to do with it.
We asked Irv Rubin if the JDL was going ahead with its lawsuit against the FBI.
Yes, they did try it, but you cannot sue the FBI. They are the sovereign. You can't sue them for defamation, slander, or libel.
In the Arab American community, we found frustration with the lack of results and the FBI's apparent backpedaling on the issue. At the same time, there is a feeling that the investigation will eventually lead authorities to the JDL or one of the other Jewish extremist groups. James Cato.
I do recall that there were three instances, other than the Santa Ana, whereby the organization that has claimed credit for that was the JDL, and the bomb device itself and the modus operandi are similar to the bomb that went off and killed Alex Ode.
We asked Cheryl Ferris for her reaction to the FBI's implicating the JDL.
I thought it was unusual when I first heard about it, and it seemed more like an official report. Then later on in the next couple of weeks, it came to be characterized as a leak. It was very strange. I mean, and Irv Rubin's comment about, well, if they're accusing the JDL, why don't they make any arrests, seemed to be a valid one, because it left this impression of this investigation going on and indictments about to be made, and yet nothing ever happened from it.
Sammy Aude.
When I contacted the people here locally, they did not have an idea of what about the statement. In my heart, you know, and I am convinced that there must be some linkage there. Obviously, I must have some information that made the representative make the statement.
Why do you think that they would say something like that in the midst of such an investigation?
Diane, I don't have the slightest idea. That when the statement came in, it was, I heard it along with everybody else. I'm in no position to comment on it. I don't know how the FBI functions. And why did they say it? I don't know.
You're listening to Pacifica radio station KPFK in Los Angeles' 1985 documentary, Political Terrorism in the United States, The Assassination of Alex O'Day on From the Vault. If you would like to get a copy of this program or any other programs in our series, call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online at fromthevaultradio.org. Remember, every donation you make helps us fulfill our mission to preserve and restore another one of our over 50,000 tapes in our collection. Now back to the program about Alex O'Day.
In January, we also spoke with members of the JDL about the group's reaction to the assassination and the apparent FBI interest in the JDL as a prime suspect. Earl Krugel.
We also told the press we didn't do it. We didn't have anything to do with it. But we don't have any tears. We're shedding any tears for this because Mr. O'Day was a PLO front man, an apologist for Yasser Arafat. Anybody that calls Yasser Arafat a moderate is an idiot, as far as I'm concerned. Yasser Arafat is a murdering dog. So is Abu Nidal and all the rest of those crazies in the PLO and their supporters, and along with Muammar Gaddafi and Hafez Assad in Syria. This guy's he's a front man for a terrorist organization who murders women and children, little babies, and runs around the world shooting up airports, throwing bombs and hand grenades at people. And this guy's he sits here in L.A. telling everybody, oh, this man's a moderate. Well, I'd like to see what an extremist looks like.
We also spoke with Irv Rubin and asked him about the JDL's perception of Alex Audet as an intransigent foe of peace with Israel.
My tear ducts are dry. I have no tears over a guy who loved Arafat, who said that any Arab who talks peace with Israel is a collaborator. And he said it on your radio show in debate with one Jack Salem of Americans for Safe Israel. And so those Arabs who do discuss peace with Israel and wind up dead at the hands of Mr. Arafat and his buddy Abu Nidal, or whatever, you know, I really have too many tears to shed over the good victims of Alex O'Day.
The program referred to by Mr. Rubin was aired here on Middle East in Focus last August 22nd. In the interest of fairness and accuracy, we felt it would be good to re-air the relevant portion. Here is how the exchange went between Jack Salem of Americans for a Safe Israel and Alex O'Day of the ADC.
Now, when you say the Palestinian people, Mr. O'Day, you're talking about the Palestinians in Jordan? You're talking about the Palestinians in Samaria, Judea, and Gaza? Or you're talking about the Palestinians in Sabra and Shatila, whatever is left of them? And when you're saying Israel is not willing to talk to them, Israel is willing to talk to them. Israel has formed the village leagues in Samaria and Judea with prominent people who are leaders within their community with whom they're willing to talk. Israel has never backed down from talking to anybody except a proven murderer. These are the people who, as recently as April the 30th, bombed a Jewish bus. And Hussein had to tell them that no terrorist activities can emanate from Amman. These people are incorrigible, Mr. O'Day, and I wish that you and I could shake hands and try to solve this problem without, you know, hurling these data at one another. But there is no evidence that the PLO is trying to negotiate. The PLO is trying to get recognition after they have been like a Phoenixburg, risen from the ashes of Beirut and then Tripoli. And now without their infrastructure, they are trying, through Hussein, to get some sort of legitimacy. But he is not legitimate. He is illegitimate. He should go away someplace and let the moderates come out, and then Israel will talk to Palestine. Israel is willing to talk to Hussein, but he's not willing to talk. But Israel is not willing to talk to Arafat. And at any time Hussein wants to sit across the table, Israel will be there. And they offer that. The minute Peres became prime minister, he offered Hussein. He said, "Come, let's sit down and let's share a piece of baklava together and talk peace."
Well, the thing is, by calling the Palestinian leadership a bunch of murderers, that's not a very kind words for people who are determined and fighting for the liberation of their homeland, for regaining their rights to self-determination in their homeland. The PLO is recognized by the majority, if not all Palestinians, who live in Israel proper, on the West Bank, and in exile. So the PLO does speak for all Palestinians being under occupation or outside the occupied territories. One way to reach peace with the Palestinians is through negotiations with their leadership. The Village League is a group of collaborators created by Israel to somehow find an alternative for the PLO leadership on the West Bank so Israel can negotiate with them. No one, no Palestinian that I know of, recognized the Village League being a representative of the Palestinian people.
Except members of the Village League themselves.
As a postscript, the Village Leagues, which had enjoyed great support from the Israeli authorities, were virtually disbanded in the spring of 1983. The reasons given at the time were, one, that they had failed to generate the expected support among Palestinians, and two, their official head was about to go on trial for murder in his hometown. We also asked members of the JDL whether they supported the right of Arab Americans to voice their opinions. Earl Krugel.
But don't you think that here in the United States people have a right to, say, speak their own opinions?
Well, listen, people have a right to say whatever they want. That's guaranteed in the Constitution. Yes, I agree.
Irv Rubin.
In our conversations with members of the American Arab community on this issue, they've been
there's nothing American or Arab about this community. They have this particular community, as you refer to them, is 100% pro-PLO. In my opinion, that would make them un-American.
They still are Americans.
Well, that's open to debate. I think that anybody who's pro-Arafat, and pro-Abu Nidal, and pro-Libya's Gaddafi should be deported from this country. God forbid anything more should happen to them.
Finally, we asked whether any JDL members had been questioned by the FBI in their investigation of the murder of Odeh. Surprisingly, the answer was an unequivocal no. Krugel.
Has the Jewish Defense League or any members of the Jewish Defense League been questioned by the FBI on this case?
No. However, I was personally notified by the FBI that I was a target for an assassination attempt. I was a number one target, and I was notified at my work, and then they called up the next day to warn me my girlfriend was in jeopardy also.
When was that?
Back in October. Now, I lost my job because of that. My boss is kind of a gutless wonder and a spineless little midget, and he panicked. He says, oh, they're going to blow my business up and this and that. And nothing happened, but he panicked and I got fired.
Well, I'm curious more specifically exactly when that was in relation to the murder of Alex
Well, Odeh. How about October 16th? That's pretty close.
Yes. You said that you had not been questioned by the FBI. Have any members of the Jewish Defense League been questioned by the FBI on this case?
No members at all.
In a separate interview, Irv Rubin told us essentially the same thing.
Have you been questioned by the FBI in connection with this case?
No, they know we didn't do it.
But have you been questioned?
No.
Okay, given the fact that they did implicate you, I just want to be crystal clear. Have you or have you not been questioned by the FBI in connection?
I told you no.
Pardon?
I told you no.
Okay.
The FBI and the Santa Ana police were just as close-mouthed with us as they appear to have been with everyone else. We recently checked with the FBI on the status of their investigation. We did learn that the FBI is considering the case politically extremely sensitive. Here's how the exchange went.
Is the investigation ongoing and active? What's happening with it?
I cannot be specific as to directions the investigation is taking or the duration that it might take, but I can say it is an open investigation, is active.
And is that, are you moving toward an arrest?
I cannot respond to that, I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm curious about the leak last November in which the FBI implicated the Jewish Defense League.
Well, I can only respond to that by saying that the only statement made by the Los Angeles FBI was that we do have an investigative interest from the standpoint of a possible terrorist incident, and that's been our total statement.
We spoke with a couple of members of the Jewish Defense League, and they said that they had not been questioned by the FBI in this case, which struck us as rather strange since the FBI had implicated them in the press.
I have no response to that, Diane.
Is there anything? Could I talk to you off the record?
No, you can't. I ordinarily I wouldn't mind, but this one is so sensitive that I just cannot.
Well, I guess that sort of takes care of it one way and the other.
Could I have your last name, please?
James.
James?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
The Santa Ana police told us they had received a report on the bomb and would have no further comments at this time. Several of the people we talked to expressed surprise and concern that the FBI may not have questioned its own prime suspects. Councilman Farrell.
Well, I would agree with you in terms of the observation that something seems to be strange. As I talk to many people in the Arab community, I've heard them express dismay.
Barbara Shaheen.
It would certainly be of concern to us if that were the case. I'm not sure that I would take the JDL at its word, only because as an Arab American, we have been subjected to various criminal attacks by people who support that group, and often they don't come out and admit that either. So, as I said, it would be of concern to us if the FBI, after initially implicating them, has not followed up on that. But I wouldn't take whatever a JDL spokesperson says at word.
We also spoke with James Abourisk, who told us he would find it, quote, strange if it were so. Death threats to the ADC were not unusual in the months and years preceding the assassination of Alex Oude. According to ADC staffers, these threats were regularly reported to the FBI, but the FBI told them such threats were not serious enough to warrant investigation, and that the Bureau received thousands of complaints every year. Again, Hint Baki.
For a long time now, people in the community have been getting threats at their homes, at their businesses. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. When Alex was killed, it was the first time that someone had actually, you know, gotten killed. I mean, lost their life. And so that completely shocked the whole community. You know, we hear threats and we, at our homes, people call us and say, you know, we're going to come and get you. But you don't really believe it because this is America and you think nothing like what happens overseas could possibly happen here.
Have you heard allegations or reports from people in the community about receiving any kind of threats?
Yeah, there is some people who have been receiving some threats. We ourselves, some, you know, not, but I've been receiving these threats a long time ago, so I don't think it's changing.
What kind of threat is that?
You know, the usual. Go home, Arabs, camel riders, this type of thing. You know, when we have the program on the air and we have our telephone number, we get exposed to all type of things.
Do you feel personally at risk after what happened to Alex Oude?
Sure, absolutely. Everyone.
Have you heard any reports of threats to members of the Arab American community?
I have heard some since the period of Alex's death.
Yeah.
There have been some phone calls and letters. And, of course, William Webster said in his publicized statement that all Arab Americans are in a zone of danger. That was seemed to be kind of threatening to all of us.
It's inconceivable to me that I can't go out. The thought of not being able to write a letter or to say what I want to say about American foreign policy, about our country and its policies, that's a tradition that we've been encouraged to cultivate, to get involved with issues that are important to our country. So in that sense, the murder of Alex was a terrible shock to me.
A spokesperson for the ADC said that acts of vandalism against Arabs and Muslims in the United States increase whenever events flare up in the Middle East. Last June, for example, at the time of the TWA hijacking, a pipe bomb was thrown into a Houston mosque and Islamic centers were vandalized in San Francisco, Dearborn, and Bethesda. Centers in Denver and Quincy, Massachusetts received bomb threats, and in Los Angeles, members of the Jewish Defense League reportedly entered a mosque and held a sit-in. Dr. Maher Hatout of the Islamic Center of Southern California said that his Vermont Avenue Center had received a telephone bomb threat in the week before Alex was killed from people claiming they would bomb out his center the way the PLO was bombed out in Tunis. Two Islamic centers in Los Angeles had bricks and stones thrown through glass as recently as January 21st and 22nd. The New York ADC office was vandalized in March 1985. In August, a pipe bomb placed on the steps of the Boston ADC office seriously injured the two bomb disposal experts who were attempting to defuse it. On November 29th, a day when Palestinians traditionally protest the United Nations partition of Palestine, a fire severely damaged the ADC's Washington office. And in the months since Alex O'Day's murder, threats and attacks against Arab Americans have continued unabated. On the bright side, the lines of communication established with progressive Jewish organizations over the past few years remain open. At the banquet held to honor Audet and raise funds for his widow and three small children, Sammy Audet made this appeal.
I appeal to the Jews, the world, to urge Israel to stop her assault on the Palestinians. Don't let the lessons of the Holocaust escape you. It's a desecration of those who died in Hitler's death camps to allow the annihilation of another people, the Palestinians.
At the same dinner, former Senator James Abarisk had occasion to thank the New Jewish Agenda.
All right, we're very proud of this one. $155, which is a collection taken up at a meeting of the Los Angeles chapter of the New Jewish Agenda.
Odie's murder was condemned by many Jewish organizations, including the local, state, and national offices of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and the American Jewish Congress. Many prominent Jews also condemned the act, among them Burton Levinson, chairman of the National Executive Committee of the Anti-Defamation League, Theodore Mann, president of the American Jewish Congress, Alan Katz and Adrian Scarlock, presidents of the American Jewish Congress in Southern and Northern California, Rabbi Marvin Heyer, Dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and Rabbi Bernard King, Chairman of the Jewish Federation's Community Relations Committee, and many others. In December, the New Jewish Agenda invited several Arab Americans to the Agenda's fourth annual Hanukkah party. Attorney Cheryl Ferris and Alex O'Day's brother Sammy were among those who attended.
The Hanukkah celebration was a wonderful experience for me. It was very moving. And the group that presented at the New Jewish Agenda is a group that the ADC has been working with and will continue to, because we all have the same goals. I think that the relations between Arabs and Jews generally is something, aside from on a personal level, I mean, of course, people have personal friends and stuff, but on an organizational level, it's something that's going to have to build very slowly, because there's no denying that there is a lot of mistrust on both sides and a lot of history that needs to be overcome before we start realizing that, well, you know, we have to work together.
As an example of this cooperative effort, the Islamic Center of Southern California and the Archdiocese of the Los Angeles Commission of Ecumenical and Religious Affairs and the Wilshire Boulevard Temple are currently sponsoring a joint exhibit of religious art at the Wilshire Boulevard Temple. This exhibit will be open to the public until February 23rd. Immediately after the October bombing of the Santa Ana ADC office, President Reagan ordered the appropriate federal authorities to provide the fullest possible support to the local police investigation already underway. 4 months later, there are at least six different law enforcement agencies working on the case, including the FBI, the Santa Ana Police, the Orange County Sheriff's Department Bomb Squad, the LAPD Anti-Terrorist Division, the U.S. Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and Treasury Department bomb experts. On November 8th, the FBI implicated the JDL. On November 29th, the ADC Washington office was damaged by arson. On December 3rd, a group of civil rights leaders, including former Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights Pat Derrien, Washington, D.C. Representative Walter Fauntroy, Jack O'Dell of the National Rainbow Coalition, and former Senator James Abarisk gave a press conference in Washington, D.C. They called on the FBI to intensify its investigation into attacks against the ADC. Abarisk announced that he had brought evidence to the FBI pointing somewhere else beyond the JDL. He said the evidence involved the movements of an individual not previously mentioned or suspected in the case. On December 5th, the day before Abarisk was to meet with FBI Chief William Webster, the Justice Department announced that the FBI would investigate possible civil rights violations in the Washington, D.C. fire, the Santa Ana bombing, and the attempted bombing of the Boston office. On December 10th, 4 days after he had met with Abarisk, Webster told reporters at a National Press Club question and answer session that, quote, Arab individuals or those supportive of Arab points of view have come within the zone of danger, targeted by a group as yet to be fully identified and brought to justice, end quote. He said this group was targeting persons it deems, quote, enemies of Israel. On the same day, Mordecai Levy, who heads the Jewish Defense Organization, a breakaway group from the JDL, told a reporter that he believed he was under investigation in connection with some of the attacks. Levy's organization was reported to have compiled a death list of, quote, enemies of the Jewish people, including the names of James Abarisk, Alex Audet, Noam Chomsky, and Los Angeles physician Jack Kent. The question of law enforcement agency ties to the Jewish Defense League is one that has been raised by the JDL itself. In May 1984, the JDL filed suit against the City of Los Angeles, Police Chief Daryl F. Gates, and a police officer named Larry Winston. The suit charged that Officer Winston had infiltrated the JDL from 1979 to 1984 and had unsuccessfully attempted to provoke the group to commit violence. The suit was dismissed on national security grounds in May 1985 after more than a month of secret hearings, which included testimony from Police Chief Gates and RAND Corporation experts. Another possible angle on anti-Arab terrorism in the U.S. was suggested by the exposure last December of Rafi, nicknamed Dirty Eitan, in the Jonathan J. Pollard spy case. Eitan, not to be confused with the former Israeli Defense Forces Chief of Staff, Rafael Raful Eitan, was the head of a special Israeli intelligence unit known as LECM. He also served under Prime Ministers Begin, Shamir, and Peres as a special anti-terrorism expert until it was revealed that LECM was the bureau that ultimately received the classified U.S. government documents that Navy counterintelligence analyst Pollard was selling to Israeli attachés in Washington, D.C. and New York. In 1982, the Paris Monthly, Israel and Palestine, linked the anti-terrorism expert Eitan to the Gush Emunim and Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League, in carrying out the 1980 bombing attacks on the Palestinian mayors. Lack of evidence makes it impossible at this point to go beyond simply asking the question whether proven Israeli spy operations in the U.S. may have an even more sinister counterpart, targeting perceived enemies of Israel and its policies, and with links through Eitan to the highest levels of the Israeli government and secret services. In the meantime, this case clearly poses a serious challenge for U.S. justice, particularly in the present climate of opinion. Once again, Councilman Robert Farrell.
I think this is one of the cases that will really test the integrity of our law enforcement and our criminal justice system. Can an Arab American who was active on behalf of civil rights issues that primarily affect Arab Americans, but as it relates to racism and stereotyping and discrimination, is something that should be a concern of all Americans. Can, simply because he is an Arab and that the explosion took place the offices of an Arab American civil rights organization, just be shunted aside and never noticed or acknowledged or have anything done about it? And I think that's the fundamental question that should bother all of us.
Middle East in Focus was written and produced by Diane James and Michelle Bogopolsky for KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles.